You're in the war room. My name is Vince Segrel. Welcome to the program. Hope everyone's doing well out there, all good on our end. Today's program, we have Vince Gasparo, a member of the Post Media Board, a member of the WWF, also a member of the brand new Bonnie Crombie Special Advisory Committee on the Environment. He will describe carbon tax and a whole host of environmental issues coming up on the program. We hope you enjoy it. Stay tuned. Vince Gasparo, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Vince.
You have been around the political scene for quite a while now. You are from Toronto.
Yep.
You are sitting on the board of Post Media. You're on the board of WWF, not WWE, WWF, which was a big controversy. I don't know if you remember that. They won that lawsuit.
Yeah.
Your educational background is interesting. You went to an alma mater. I did York University, and you did some political science and economics.
Yeah.
You went off to Villanova and London School of Economics. So you've got this financial economic background, but you got the bug politically, and you got involved politically with many folks, which we'll talk about. You know, you've worked for prime ministers, mayors, been around a lot of politicians. You travel the world. The environmental piece, you've become a bit of an expert in terms of the last 15, 20 years on environmental issues and the climate. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you actually got involved in the climate scene.
Well, once again, Vince, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I don't think we'll forget each other's names during this interview. So that's we're starting off on the right foot. In regards to my involvement in sort of climate finance, and you know, using finance as a force for good, I really saw it firsthand when I worked for Prime Minister Paul Martin. It was something that he was passionate about, is passionate about, and I saw, like I said, firsthand the ability of capital being deployed into areas to sort of have an opportunity to change things for the better. And I've had the privilege of working for two large financial institutions. I worked for a private equity fund, all in and around sustainable finance. And we can get into some of the projects I've had the ability to finance and all that great stuff. But it was really my time working for Prime Minister Martin.
So having a bit of having the financial background and working with, as you know, we're working in these political fields, they're always the topics of the day. You know, the climate comes and goes, you've got infrastructure, there's all kinds of, it seems like the climate piece really stuck with you. And, you know, many times you'll watch a lot of people in the global scene, whether it was Al Gore, which you've met, and other folks that push the envelope, but you seem really passionate about the issue. And in many cases, politicians, individuals, they talk about it, but you know, they're on the bandwagon today, but they're off the bandwagon the next day. But you seem pretty passionate about it, and you've been around the scene for a while. As you transition and you work in on the financial side, what areas do you think are the most important today to deal with?
Well, in terms of what I think is the fundamental piece in terms of dealing with the climate crisis, is attracting private sector capital, and I don't want to geek out totally, but attracting private sector capital into projects to help decarbonize our economy on the one hand, but also create good long-term paying jobs and also help create economic growth. This is a multi-pronged approach. This isn't a zero-sum game where someone has to lose and somebody has to win. I think that there can be overall a net benefit to society by investing in clean energy projects. And we're seeing it. So for example, at one of the financial institutions I was with, I was fortunate enough to finance the largest wastewater to energy project in the world, which was right here in Toronto. And it is at Toronto Western Hospital. It's reducing the natural gas usage of Toronto Western Hospital by 90%. And just to give your viewers a sense of what that means, That is the equivalent of taking 1,811 cars off the road every year per year for 30 years. Huge environmental impact. Benefit.
Right.
In addition, creating direct and indirect jobs of about 200 for about 200 people, and saving the hospital about $1 million per year every year for 30 years, which that money is going back into operations at the hospital to improve our healthcare system. So that is a perfect example of the positive feedback loop that can happen when you're decarbonizing the economy.
Taking that particular instance, which is a phenomenal situation, and parlaying it into other industries is what has to happen. And I'm assuming a lot of these industries don't like change because it's going to cost money, but in the terms of the long-term net effect will always help us as human beings on the planet.
Absolutely. But it also, I think one of the points I wanted to highlight with that previous example, and there's some others that I can highlight, is it on a sort of over a period of time, it creates a rate of return. So for businesses, decarbonizing, retrofitting your office space, for example, switching to solar and wind and geothermal, swapping out your fleet from gas to EV generates a rate of return, and over a period of time has, like I said, a net positive benefit to a business's financials, and it makes good economics.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, you know, on the Toronto Western Hospital on a bigger scale, you had mentioned some of the simpler things that someone was watching this program on a Saturday or Sunday morning,
sure,
saying, what can I do? And, you know, obviously the recycling piece, whatever. What are the most simple, basic things that you would recommend that most common person could do and help the environment?
Yeah, great question. So I think there are, so first of all, I would, wherever you're watching this, look at different, whatever municipality you're in, and they have retrofit programs where folks will come in, do an energy audit, work out an arrangement through your municipality to help retrofit your home. So another project that I was fortunate enough to be a part of, we financed the City of Ottawa's Better Home program that helped finance the retrofitting of people's residences. So there are these programs out there, and it over the long term can save a great deal of money for a homeowner, and it may not necessarily cost you upfront capital.
You know, Vince, in talking about that, I mean, in the last 15, 20 years, this whole solar retrofit was big, and it seems like it's fallen off. And I know some folks who tried to retrofit their homes, but they ran up against some, whether it was bureaucrats that really didn't know how the program worked, were plugging into the system. The solar piece, you still feel it's still an ongoing viable situation for people to convert?
Absolutely. There is some net metering benefits that are available. I think some of the changes the provincial government has made over the last few years has hurt that a little bit. And to the detriment of the province, because you're now seeing, for example, and I don't want to turn this show into a political show, but Doug Ford has in essence recarbonized our grid.
Yeah, we'll
talk about that. But he has recarbonized our grid, running natural gas peaker plants basically 24/7 now. And it's a big problem. And he didn't have to do that. He canceled a lot of solar projects when he first came in for political reasons. And it's, I think it's been detrimental to our grid.
Put us behind the eight ball, for sure.
Absolutely.
Another common thing that most people can relate to is driving a car. And you keep hearing the media, some people have Teslas and they have these quasi cars that go half and half. And they keep throwing out dates in terms of when the conversion is going to be for everybody on the electric side. And then when you talk to people, say, but my battery runs down, I can't take this situation. Give us a little bit of an update in terms of the car conversion. Do you actually see it happening where we all drive electric cars in the near future or in some point in the future?
So I've had the privilege of financing EVs and EV infrastructures for commercial commercial entities. What I can say is I listen to pretty smart people out there, guys like Flavio Volpe at the Auto Parts Manufacturers Association and folks like him. And what they tell me is that the way the supply chain currently is, we're not quite there to hit a 2035 target in terms of what the federal government has laid out. What I will say though is as time goes on, EVs will represent a larger and larger percentage of our overall vehicle mix. Hybrids are becoming more prevalent. I think Toyota announced all of their vehicles over the next while are all going to be hybrid based. So you're seeing that shift. You know, the days of the internal combustion engine are coming to an end. And I want to just provide one stat, Vince. At one point, the province of Ontario was the largest manufacturer of horse-drawn carriages. And if politicians then took the view that some politicians now have around EVs and the environment, Ontario would still be the largest manufacturer of horse-drawn carriages, and that wouldn't be good for anybody.
Right. I know you had said that we don't want to make this a political show, but you know everything we do has a political impact. And so I want to ask you a political question, I guess. Most of the time when you talk to environmentalists and people that are involved with the environment, they'll see themselves or they'll say, oh, they're on the left side of the spectrum. They're fully on the left side of the spectrum. But I'm finding more and more people that I speak to, whether you're on the center, the right part of the spectrum, the left part of the spectrum, I think more and more people are open to climate change and making changes towards a better climate environment. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think people are seeing the impact of climate change. Canada just experienced the largest amount of wildfires in our history. The overall geographic area of Greece was burning in Canada. To the point where smoke and other pollutants crossed the border into New York and caused a great deal of haze and made quite a bit of news last summer. This is going to become more prevalent if we don't take action. And the longer we wait to take action, the more drastic the measures are required. And we don't want to go down that road. We want to take moderate, sensible action now to sort of prevent the worst effects of climate change.
I've noticed that you've met Al Gore, other national dignitaries that you traveled around. This whole Paris Accord was something that when Donald Trump came into power, you know, he canned it. There was a lot of backlash. What's your position on that whole scene?
Well, I've been fortunate enough to have been appointed by the government of Canada to the last three UN climate conferences, Glasgow, Sharm el-Sheikh, and Dubai. My view is this. The market has already shifted towards more solar, more wind, less oil and gas. And just to give you a perfect example, so Donald Trump gets elected 2016, removes the United States from the Paris Climate Accord. 75% of all energy that came online in the United States between 2016 and 2020 while Trump was president were renewables. So even though Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Paris Climate Accords, the American people chose to invest in renewables. So there isn't a single politician on the planet that will be able to stop this shift. And if you don't believe me, talk to any banker on Bay Street or Wall Street and ask them how easy is it to finance an oil and gas project and how easy is it to finance a solar, wind, or geothermal, et cetera, a clean energy project. It's night and day. The market has shifted, and that's a good thing. And that goes back to, I think, what we were talking about before the break, which is the movement of private capital into renewable energy projects, and that shift is and has happened.
And as you said, you've worked both on the private and the public side, and you know you keep hearing these words: private public partnerships. The climate area is really no different, and it really needs that private public partnership to keep moving forward on a positive note.
Yeah, that is true. And the Toronto Western Hospital example, is a prime example because we partnered with the Canada Infrastructure Bank. Another project I worked on was financing the Six Nations of the Grand Rivers equity in Ontario's second largest wind farm, a 230 megawatt wind farm, which has great economic impact for the nation. On a net present value basis, is going to put about $10 million at the time when we were doing the analysis, about $10 million back into the development corporation, which goes into socioeconomic programs on reserve. That was also a public-private partnership where you had the government of Ontario, in particular, the Ontario Finance Authority, come in and provide some guarantees. But there's one other point here, Vince, I want to be perfectly clear on, and that is, There are a lot of people out there that think if you're developing oil and gas, you are on the forefront of free market capitalism. I want to be perfectly clear. Oil and gas developers have been benefiting from state support at the federal and provincial level for decades. For decades, these large infrastructure projects, especially in Canada, but in other jurisdictions as well, require some level of de-risking of these projects. And you see it happening in a lot of different technology and asset types.
Vince, you are also on the board of the WWF.
Yes.
Not the WWE.
That's right.
And the WWF is a well-recognized group that is known globally.
Yep.
And that's very, very impressive. I was reading up on it further because you'll see some of the commercials every once in a while. They have the commercials and you'll get bits and pieces of it. Tell us a little bit about the board and what it really does.
Well, listen, the WWF Canada does some great work. Just a plug, we're having our CN Tower climb. In April, where we look to raise a significant amount of money. So please go on our website and register and come and join me while we climb the CN Tower. In terms of the WWF, a lot of different types of projects that we're involved in. One of them, for example, just to give folks sort of a test case, in St. John's, New Brunswick, we were walking down the St. John River where there was a great deal of flooding. WWF came in with some of our partners and we provided some funding to them so that we would plant a certain type of tree and brush more broadly that absorbed a great deal of water. And that nature-based solution to stop the flooding of the St. John River has allowed for development to occur along the banks of the river for people to be able to walk and use the space, something that wasn't possible before. And that's just one example of the types of projects that the WWF funds and gets involved in. And there's a lot of other advocacy work. And we work with our international partners on projects globally as well. It's a great organization. Megan Leslie is the CEO and is doing some excellent, excellent work.
I've done that walk and it's the climb. Yeah. It's worth doing. It's just the feeling of it, and especially when it's involved with a group like the WWF, it's worth doing.
And my wife beat my time last year, so. We have a little friendly competition. I have to lose a few pounds here to try to keep Thanks. Up.
Right now, the hottest words in the media right now is carbon tax, carbon tax, carbon tax. And we have a newspaper called Millennial, which we're putting out this week. And the whole newspaper is surrounded around what carbon tax is. You know, you'll hear Polyev in the House of Commons talking to Trudeau and knocking him about how it affects people's shopping bill and food. Most people don't even know what the carbon tax is. Can you give us just a little bit of an educational behind what the carbon tax is?
Sure. So the carbon tax is in the iteration that has been presented by the federal government is basically a retail tax on goods and some services. Within the economy. And the whole premise is that you are trying to link fully the environment and the economy when you're making choices in terms of consumption. Now, the way the federal government has structured this is the vast majority of people get a credit back for their portion of the carbon tax on some of the goods and services they consume.
Okay.
the issue with that, and we've seen it in the media, is that it has had some inflationary effect on you know, goods and services within the economy. And we can get into my personal view in a moment.
Yep.
But the fact is that there are other ways that I think we can more effectively manage the linking of the environment and the economy, where it's not so onerous on individuals, but ensures that the largest polluters within the economy are efficiently taxed in that regard.
Yeah, unfortunately, the whole carbon tax scene has become very political, and every politician is using it as a political kind of a football back and forth. Speaking of politics, Bonnie Crombie, who is the provincial Liberal leadership person who's going to take the Liberals into the next provincial election here in Ontario against Doug Ford, has put together a panel on the environment and a policy type panel. You were selected to be on that panel. Tell us a little bit about the panel. You know, obviously Bonnie Crombie has come out and as early as a couple of days ago, when this show's airing, that she is definitely against implementing a carbon tax on the folks of Ontario. Right. But you've been appointed on this advisory committee. Tell us a little bit about the advisory committee and some of your political feelings on around the carbon tax piece.
Sure. So I was honored when Bonnie Crombie asked me to serve on this panel. It really is going to be a panel which helps chart the course for her in the Ontario Liberal Party to sort of, again, and I said it earlier, build out a climate plan that is also good for the economy and creates good long-term paying jobs. They're all mutually linked. And I gave you two projects that I had the privilege of financing that exactly touch on those three points.
Right.
It's possible they exist. In regards to my view on the carbon tax, I have no plans to recommend a carbon tax during the process of advising the leader. I think there are other ways that we can achieve similar results without putting the onus on individuals.
Yeah, and you heard it first. You're no carbon tax.
That's right.
No carbon tax. Nope. There's other ways to penalize, obviously, people that pollute the environment, whatever, but no carbon tax to the residents of Ontario.
Absolutely. And the fact is there are market-based solutions for it. And, you know, publicly, I've supported cap and trade, for example,
right.
Which is basically our largest polluters are given a certain cap in terms of how much they can pollute. Anything above that, they need to acquire carbon credits, for example. And the businesses within an industry that are able to become more efficient end up having excess carbon credits and can sell those carbon credits to their competitors or to someone else, and it generates revenue. And then you have a carbon credit scheme. There's jurisdictions that have this around the world, the EU, Quebec, California. So I'd be more in favor of a cap and trade. But again, I don't want to prejudge the work that the committee still has to do.
But at the end of the day, the committee will advise Bonnie Crombie in terms of what's there, what can happen, and what can be the positives. Because as you said, you know, Ford, when he came in, a lot of people don't know a lot of the trends that he reversed. So I think it's important to lay out exactly where we're at on an environmental piece and then act accordingly.
Absolutely. And but the work has to be done.
Yeah.
And the advice that we need to give to the leader and to the party over the coming weeks and months is going to be critical in terms of determining our plan.
That's got to have you back. I mean, we can cover hours about this, and it's all very interesting things that are really going to affect a lot of our day-to-day lives, whether it's in our pocketbook or in terms of our mental and physical being in the environment. So very important topics. I think it's crucial that we keep a lot of our viewers updated. We'd love to get you to come back at some point in the near future and continue to give us updates on the environment and a lot of the other good things you're doing.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Thanks for being on The Worm. We've had Vince Gasparo with us on this interesting program, and we'll catch you next week.